Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is to my right, Justice Bill Meyer.
Hello.
To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have one case set for oral submission this afternoon. The other cases are set for submission on the briefs. I understand both sides are ready. So if you'll call the case, please. Warren, you ready?
May it please the court, clerks, and honored guests. We're here today. I think this is the third time this case has been in front of the court. My client, Cheryl Serber, and her company, JPI, Johnson Property, gave $100,000 to Dan Franklin, who joined with two other individuals, or the appellees in this case, Woy and Lombardo. This tale is told in two subplots, the first one being the fraud that Franklin visited upon Ms. Serber, and then how that interacts with the second part of the plot, which is the involvement of the three individuals, Franklin, Woy, and Lombardo, as part of PLI. The timeline is such that in 1999, PLI was formed. Everybody agrees with this, middle of 1999. The testimony and depositions that were given 2004 and 5, you hear Woy and Lombardo kind of say, well, this Franklin character is kind of shaky. We don't want to be involved with him. And they say they part ways. And they say they part ways by means of a settlement agreement, which is the crux and the basis of all the contention, all the major issues of this case. It's all about the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement was not given to us in 2001, although we asked for it with the original petition. It was not in 2002 when Dan Franklin filed bankruptcy, and he had some issues there, and he's no longer part of this case. But he was asked, and he said there was no settlement agreement. There was no settlement agreement in 2003. Only in 2004, after, and there's a lot of twists and turns, there's a lot of cases I'm sure you see, where the individual claims of Serber were separated out because JPI gave the $100,000 to Franklin. Franklin gave it to PLI. So there was a default judgment of $1.5 million plus in favor of JPI, Serber's company, from PLI, which is the company that the three individuals formed, at least temporarily. So the question is whether or not this settlement agreement was real and whether it actually operated to allow the two others to disentangle themselves from PLI. During his 2005 deposition, Woy stated that he did not show Lacey, who was his corporate attorney, the settlement agreement that he wrote back in 1999. But he did show Lacey the settlement agreement a year or so prior to his deposition, as he had several opportunities to give this to us. He had continuing duty to provide this documentation from the time that we originally filed the original petition in 2001. So this thing did not show up until after it became clear that the directors may be held liable under the Texas tax code for the debts of the corporate body, the corporate entity, after it lost it, because it lost its, I'm sorry, I jumped over a little bit. It lost its charter and corporate privileges very soon after being created. If you look at the settlement agreement, and it is attached to this document that I gave you, and this is really just my talking points made a little more formal. There is a Exhibit M6 is what you'll see very prominently at the bottom of the introductory letter. And in the first paragraph, it says, the bottom of the first paragraph says, this agreement was executed on or about November 11th, 1999. And since that time, my clients have had nothing to do with Profit Live, Inc., Mr. Franklin, or any of the other defendants. This is in 2004, and he's saying that this thing was created in 2005, and 5 years prior. Never been admitted, never brought up until that time. But then we turn to the next page, and we actually see the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement says a number of things. They're going to release, these three individuals are going to release each other from any claims that might be going on or might be present. And in paragraph four, if you can read the bottom of this, it says, upon full payment of the amounts referenced, Woy and Lombardo will transfer full ownership of Profit Live domain name to Franklin. You'll see a lot of this discussion of this domain name because it shows this settlement document to be a lie. Here we are in paragraph four, and it's also mentioned another place in here. But this domain name didn't get purchased until the middle of 2005. In the record, you'll see a record of Lombardo buying the domain name in May of 2005. 2000. So this settlement agreement's
2000 or 2005?
2000, I'm sorry. So 6 months later, after this settlement agreement, he's supposed to sell this domain name to him that doesn't exist yet. This document was created for litigation purposes. You see the same thing later on in the bylaws, which again were asked for in 2001. It didn't show up until much later. In the bylaws, it references, and that's, you'll see this on at the bottom, it says page 1559 of what I've given you. You'll see an annual meeting discussed. In the annual meeting, it says under paragraph 2.1, the annual meeting of the shareholders for years beginning after 2004. Now, these bylaws were supposedly written in 1999, and executed in 1999. And in fact, at the end of this set of bylaws, I didn't give it to you, but it does say that they are executed in 1999. But here, right here in the middle, is paragraph 2.1. It says, years beginning after 2004. Why would that be? It would be because this document did not exist until 2004.
But this is jury argument, and what was the basis of the trial court's determination?
Your Honor, we're here because we believe that the trial court failed to provide a judgment based on the great weight of the evidence, and that's why we're here. There are two things that went wrong. We think that the great weight of the evidence goes opposite of the way the trial court felt, found, and there was an erroneous use of the law. There is a 2003 and 2004 version of the law, the Texas Business Corporation Act, that was used to determine.
With your agreement.
Say again?
With your agreement.
At the trial court, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so what authority do you have for your request that we review the trial court's findings of facts and conclusions of law by using a substantively different version of the Texas Business Corporation Act? Because that goes against everything that appellate courts do. You ask the trial court to use one law, the trial court did what you asked, applied the law, came up with their findings of facts, and then you want us to apply a different version of the law because now you don't think that was the right law. The trial court never got a chance to use the earlier version and apply that to the facts and come up with findings of facts and conclusions of law. You want us to just substitute that law and do it all over, get a do-over here. What authority do you have for that?
Your Honor, I have no authority to say that other than it's plain error to allow, it's a miscarriage of justice to say that you're going to have a law that's not properly, we're going to have miscarriage of justice if we have my client lose $1.5 million because her attorney and because the rest of the court, nobody noticed that the law changed in 2004 and they're using a 2004 law in 1999 for 1999.
Don't we see cases all the time where that's a basis of a legal malpractice claim but not something that you get a do-over in the appellate court?
Your Honor, as a zealous advocate for my client, I'm going to argue all of the potential ways that I could win And
you don't have any authority for that request?
I have no authority for that at this time.
Okay, thank you.
So it goes back to the great weight of the evidence. Your Honor, and it's important to note that Judge Wallace is a fine judge, but he was at the tail end of more than a dozen years, at least five judges, two trips to this room, and he took notice of the entire affair. And a lot of things, I don't think that anybody ever brought these bylaws or some of this material he never saw, even though he took notice of it. And it's very understandable, but I guess what I'm saying is that even though we give a lot of credibility and of course we want to agree with the trial court when we can, whenever we ask too much of a trial court, I think it's reasonable to say, well, there are things here that the trial court should have gotten different. And so we're asking you to unfind these conclusions. It can't be that we're going to allow a settlement agreement that doesn't say anywhere in it that these people are resigning. There's no shareholders meetings. There's nothing. You have a piece of paper that doesn't talk about resignation of directors. It's being allowed to stand for that. And we'd say that's against the weight of the evidence. And when you see evidence that's not just a little evidence, but a lot of evidence, this document did not exist in 1999. Who would do this? Who would say in 1999, we're going to settle this document, and these people are never going to have anything to do with each other after November of 1999? But by the way, 6 months later, there's evidence by GoDaddy where Lombardo is buying the domain name. Really? That's uncontroverted. So in middle of 2000, he buys a domain name that supposedly he sold 6 months earlier. This document cannot be true. Cannot be true. And there's no evidence to suggest that it was bought earlier or that anybody said, well, we're going to settle this now. We're going to talk bad about you. We're going to talk about how you're a con man. We don't want anything to do with you. But 6 months from now, I'm going to buy this domain name. No, what happened was these three individuals realized that they're in trouble, that they're going to be held liable for a big honking judgment. And so they said, we got to get out of this. They didn't go to their corporate attorney, Mr. Lacey, and say, give us a settlement or dissolve the corporation, give it all to Franklin. What they did was, we have this settlement agreement, and it never, you just read it. It's a settlement between three individuals releasing each other. They're not resigning as directors. Now, in 2004, they pop up with these new bylaws, and they say, these bylaws allow us to resign at any time. Really? That's your evidence? Bylaws that say that you didn't bring up until 2004, even though you're obligated to for the last 5 years. 2004, you pop up and you give them to us, and they say in the bylaws, supposedly executed in 1999, that meetings after 2004 will be in such and such place. Now, we have all practiced law. Probably I've practiced law fewer years than anybody in this room, but I know what happens here. Whenever I'm doing bylaws, I pull up the last set of bylaws I did, and I make changes as appropriate. And that's what happened here. These bylaws did not exist in 1999. These bylaws were written in 2004 and backdated. Of course, they weren't really executed either. But these were produced in discovery by opposing counsel, offered as 1999 bylaws. It's a fraud upon the court. Not just a little bit, not just... Who could do this? Is somebody going to stand up here and say, in 1999, I made a typo that instead of 1999, I wrote 2004? Really? I don't think so. That's the crux of the argument. There's a lot more we could get into, but I want to maintain a minute or two if you have any questions for me.
I have a question.
Sure.
Where in the record is there any evidence that these bylaws were, other than your reference to 2004 that's in there, is there any testimony, is there any evidence anywhere else in the record?
Don't nod your head.
That these items were produced at a later date, the bylaws.
There's a discussion in the record, opposing counsel, or at the time, brings it up as an excuse of why they can resign just by deciding to. and not having to have something in writing or by trying to excuse this document.
All right. Anything else? And you think that some statement made by opposing counsel is evidence that we should latch on to that proves that your contention
made
in 99?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I spoke imprecisely. There's a line of testimony. Opposing counsel is asking his witnesses, Boy and Lombardo, what gives them the right to resign, and they talk about this.
And who is it that's doing the testifying, and where do I find it in the record?
I will see if I can get that for you.
You can do it. I'd appreciate it, because I have been trying to read this for some time, and I want you to know that this has been a real challenge to read everything that's involved in this case, but I've tried to do that. But I didn't see anything in your brief that referenced to any particular part of the record where there was evidence presented, like you're talking about, that the bylaws were actually not prepared until 2005, as you're contending. And I'm interested in what evidence was presented to Judge Wallace, because he didn't have a specific finding of fact that relates to the exact date of these bylaws. But there are things that he has concluded in terms of factual conclusions that seem to imply that he did not agree with your assessment.
I don't know that the 2004 date was discussed with reference to the bylaws. I don't know if it was challenged in that way at the trial court. I will figure that out, though, next time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Do you go by Chris or Christian? What do you go by?
Christian.
Christian, all right, you're up.
May it please the court, counsel, attorneys, other people in the courtroom. I represent Jay Lombardo and Jordan Moy in this matter. I give a brief discussion of the facts to really bring the court up to speed on the timeline here. In July 1999, Mr. Franklin approached Mr. Lombardo to join into what became known as Profit Live, Inc. After that, Mr. Lombardo approached Mr. Woy, they are friends, to him also to join. In July of 1999, the three of these individuals, as shareholders and directors, filed the Articles of Incorporation with the state of Texas. From that point, the evidence at trial elicited from both Mr. Woy and Mr. Lombardo was that Mr. Franklin was someone they could not get in touch with, they could not have meetings with, and they just said, you know what, we're not going forward. Mr. Woy testified, as did Pat Lacey, the corporate counsel, that they had decided it's not worth going forward. They took a little bit of time to get Mr. Franklin in the room so they could actually discuss concluding the business. That occurred on November 11th, 1999, which is also the date of the settlement agreement that we've heard so much about. During that day, November 11th, 1999, at Mr. Woy's office, which happened to be the office of Profit Live, Inc., or PLI as it was briefed, there was a shareholders meeting held. The three shareholders, uncertified shares, are Woy, Lombardo, and Franklin. They met, they decided that Mr. Woy and Mr. Lombardo would not be a part of the company anymore. They would move on and go their separate ways. Mr. Franklin would continue the company. Now, what happens nearly 2 years later, according to testimony from Ms. Serber, she met a Dan Franklin. Dan Franklin told her about this company he had, about workshops for real estate, and they talked about an investment, not a debt, an investment, where Ms. Serber's company, Johnson Property Investment, or JPI as it was commonly known, would invest $100,000. What we saw in the evidence before the trial court was JPI invested in Profit Life Partnership, a different entity. There were three exhibits that were in the record, 6A, B, and C, where it clearly shows that JPI invested $100,000 for a 10% interest in PLP, Profit Life Partnership. Now, the important point on that issue is Profit Life Partnership and Profit Life, Inc. are completely separate entities. Mr. Lombardo and Mr. Woy had nothing to do with Profit Life Partnership, and in fact, didn't even know it existed because
in PLI partner in PLP.
No, the what the
what it says in the partnership agreement.
I believe the partnership agreement at section, I believe it's three. No, it's Article 1, Section 4, states that PLP is to acquire the 100% of the stock of PLI. I believe that's what it states. The key to that point is JPI made the investment in a completely separate entity. Woy and Lombardo had been gone out of the picture for almost 2 years, had nothing to do with PLP, had no clue it existed, had never met Ms. Serber, had never heard of JPI, had never heard of anything associated with JPI. So then here comes this lawsuit. For the first time, Mr. Woy and Mr. Lombardo in 2001 hear about some investment that's in a pleading that was made and handed from Ms. Serber as JPI to Dan Franklin for this interest in PLP. So there are really 4 points. Now, counsel has talked about really 1 point in this settlement agreement. There are really 4 points that are of interest and importance for the court to consider. One, the finding that Judge Wallace made was that Woy and Lombardo were not directors at the time the charter was forfeited on February 13, 2001. That goes back to the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement and all this argument about fraud and things of that nature, as you pointed out, Justice, that's an argument for the jury. That's an argument for the trier of the fact. That's not an argument for this appellate court to consider. They sat down, they had a shareholders meeting, which complies with both Section 3.4 of the bylaws. Now, there's one interesting point made. Counsel referenced that Judge Wallace was not able to consider the bylaws. That is inaccurate. The plaintiff, JPI and Serber, actually offered the bylaws as Exhibit 7 at trial. It was the plaintiffs that offered that as an exhibit, so it's certainly considered by the trial court.
I think what he said was that he took notice but didn't actually read it. And nobody here was trial counsel, right?
That's correct.
And I've got to say I'm disturbed by what appears to be the gamesmanship at the trial level. But that's, you weren't there, he wasn't there, so that's not really before us.
Yes, Your Honor. So the settlement agreement was entered into after the shareholders meeting. It's in accordance with the bylaws, Section 3.4, which states the directors can be removed at any time. Counsel spent a lot of time in briefing discussing two variations of Section 2.32 of the Texas Business Corporations Act. The settlement agreement meets both sections. Either way, whether it's the 2004 version or the 2003 version, because there was a shareholders meeting, it was reduced to writing. The settlement agreement specifically says that Woy and Lombardo shall have no interest whatsoever in PLI or with Mr. Franklin. That wiped the slate clean. Mr. Franklin testified in an affidavit that's a part of the record that, yeah, they were removed. We believe they were removed, and I appointed new directors at a later date. Everyone was under the auspices that Mr. Woy and Lombardo were no longer a part of PLI. Ms. Serber testified at trial on multiple occasions that there were no misrepresentations made by Woy and Lombardo. She didn't know them. She saw them at an event, but certainly there was never any discussion with PLI or PLP with either one of them. So even if the settlement agreement was in place, which we're not conceding, of course, but even if the settlement agreement's in place, we're looking at the Texas tax code, section 171.255, sections A and C. The court and the case law, Williams versus Adams was the case that we cited, say that these two sections have to be read together because the statute itself is penal and draconian in nature. So section A says that the directors may be liable for debts of the corporation after the forfeiture of the charter. Well, you've got to read that together with Section C, which is ultimately says, paraphrasing, that the director is not liable if they didn't know about the investment and could not have known about the investment. This case falls directly in line with Section 171.255C, which specifically states, as I mentioned, these gentlemen had nothing to do with the corporation for approximately 2 years. Everyone believed, including Mr. Franklin, the other third shareholder and director, that they were no longer a part of the group. They were not with PLI. They didn't do anything for PLI. They transacted no business. They had no knowledge of any meetings, no knowledge of any investments. They certainly could not have had knowledge of this investment and done due diligence because everyone believed they were gone. They were not a part of it.
Relying on this second section, does that mean that you're conceding that this business investment was in fact a debt under the Texas tax code?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. That's going to be my next point. I've exhausted that. That's the basic argument. They didn't have knowledge of it and couldn't have. There's certainly no reason to find that these gentlemen had anything to do with this investment. Now, the next portion, and you jumped ahead of me, Justice Gabriel, was this was an investment, not a debt. A debt is different than an investment. A debt was formerly defined by the Texas tax code. It's no longer defined in the Texas tax code, but it basically is you have to have some relationship that has some certain money that's owed. An investment is certainly not that. I had to go to the Black's Law Dictionary. The investment is an expenditure to acquire property or assets to produce revenue. That's certainly different. By making an investment, as we all know, whether you make a stock investment or purchase a security, you're putting your money on the line knowing you may lose it. And that's what happened here. Unfortunately, JPI makes an investment in PLP, loses money, loses $100,000. It's not a debt. It's not what we would normally consider what the statute goes for. A lot of the case law talks about a corporate debt being some sort of breach of contract. I can't enter into a contract with you, lose my charter, and say, too bad, you're out of luck. That's what Section 171.255 goes towards. So certainly we're not conceding that it's actually a debt. And then the fourth point is just what I've gone over a little bit before. PLP and PLI, as Judge Wallace found, are two separate entities. These two gentlemen, Roy and Lombardo, had nothing to do with PLP, which the partnership agreement specifically states is where the investment went. It was a 10% interest in PLP for $100,000. That was the investment that was made. It certainly wasn't a PLI investment.
Who was the check made out to?
It was made out to PLI. That is who the check was made out to, but on the same date, May 25th, 2001, when the $100,000 check was cut, was the same day it was signed, the partnership agreement was signed. Going back, there are really two points that have come up. The first point about whether they were directors was a factual finding. The evidence was heavily set forth at the trial court. This pended before the 96th and a couple other courts for about 12 years. There was certainly an opportunity to make an elaborate record, specifically on the points that counsel raised. That was not done. There was no evidence to point to fraud in the bylaws or the settlement agreement. So it's certainly not against the great weight of the evidence to make the findings unjust and erroneous. So it certainly does not meet the requirements of a factual finding. The other three points that I just mentioned were based on legal findings. The court, as you know, has to look at the entire record, and if there's anything to support the court's findings, must be upheld.
Mr. Christian, what do you think is the entire record in this case?
That's a great question, Justice. The record is extremely expansive, going back and forth with multiple courts. We certainly would say the trial court transcript and some of the underlying pleadings associated with it.
Trial court took judicial knowledge of all pending and prior court actions. It isn't that a part of the record?
I believe it is.
Okay, thank you.
I have nothing further unless the court has any questions for me.
Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen of the court.
Warren.
Your Honor, I think that we, one of the things we did brief properly, I gave you a good case on this idea that I can take $100,000 from somebody and use it fraudulently in some other way and then say, oh no, it was an investment, therefore I can defraud you, is a farce. The case law doesn't support that, and I've given you a good case on that. The bylaws.
Can I say it's a debt?
Yes, ma'am.
What is your case?
Your case says that when you invest $10,000 in a business enterprise, that amounts to a legally enforceable obligation for a sum certain of money, which was the definition of debt under the Texas tax code.
Are you quoting from
the
case?
That's a question. No, I'm quoting from
okay.
the Texas tax code.
Your Honor, what I did is I read the case. It looked to me like I was on force, and I haven't read it in the last couple of days.
Okay.
So it's, I think that when the court reads it, it's, but the general idea
what is
too
the case?
Is
what are, case are you talking about that is on
sorry,
all fours?
This is Shrepnick versus Shearson Lehman Brothers, 889 Southwest 2nd, 589 Southwest 2nd, 578. That's out of Houston. But the basic idea is if I take money for an investment that and it's used for an investment, that's one thing. But you can't say, here, I'm going to do all of my con artist work by calling it an investment, and then whenever it goes bad, I'm going to say, oh, that was an investment. You can't come after me under the tax code. Of course not. If you take it as an investment and you invest it, that's fine. But if you take it as an investment and you defraud somebody, you can't call that an investment. At best, it's a breach of contract. But here, it was
Mr.
clearly
Norris,
fraud.
I'm looking at Trial Exhibit 5, which is the check. Front and back. The check's made out to Pro-Life, Inc.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a corporation, and it,
yes, Your Honor.
I mean, it was a corporation in terms of what your contentions are.
For a brief period of time.
I've always wondered about a corporation that never had stock issued. However, this check's made out to Pro-Life, L-I-B-E, Inc., and the endorsement on it, best I can tell from what I can read in this particular exhibit, is signed by Mr. Franklin on a personal basis, just an individual. Doesn't say president, doesn't say anything. Just Franklin.
Yeah.
And so what paperwork was there that was in the record that further documented or otherwise explained the reason for this check?
There was a discussion in the testimony that the PLP did not yet exist, at least with a bank account. And to my client's knowledge, it was never actually created. But it was supposed to be at some future time, and they were going to run it through the PLI. That's all there was.
So PLP, the partnership, didn't exist.
Correct.
On May the 25th of 2005. And therefore, we put this made this check out at Mr. Franklin's request, I take it.
Correct.
To Profit Live, Inc. Were there, what documentation, paperwork, was ever given to Johnson Property Investments, Inc. in exchange for this check?
None.
No notes, no contracts, no stock certificates, no partnership agreement, nothing.
Nothing, Your Honor. Not a bit.
Was there not a partnership agreement for PLP?
There was a document that my client signed, Cheryl Serber signed, but as far as she knows, it was never executed by other parties. It was produced much, I think it's years later, along with these other things, but it was never acted upon. They never did anything. The testimony was it never got off the ground.
So she signed it years later?
No, she signed it when she gave the money.
Right. So there was a partnership agreement that she signed at the time that she invested or paid the money.
It gets into the question of when does it come into being? Does it come into being when one person signs it or when both people sign it? You know,
that wasn't
so,
my question. I'm
right.
saying there was one she signed at the same time she paid the money.
She believed there was, yes.
She believed there was?
She believed that it was in the process of being created and other people were going to sign.
She signed a document that
purported
to be the partnership agreement.
That's correct. It was her intent to be part of the partnership agreement. She signed a document, and it's part of the record. So she did that. I wanted to hit a couple other things.
Well, your time's up.
Then I won't. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Your case is submitted. We appreciate your argument. You're free to go about your business. This court will be adjourned.